So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Way.
Welcome to another edition of Review Away, everyone. I'm John Pollock, along with Wei Ting. Wei, this is going to be an action-packed edition of Review Away.
I can feel it. I can feel the action.
We are not only going to be reviewing the 2005 SummerSlam event, but we're also going to be chatting about our recent trip to Wizard World, where we're going to be bringing you some exclusive interviews today that we conducted while we were down at Wizard World.
Interviews with some pro wrestling's most infamous characters.
Yes, and boy, did we have some hard-hitting chats at Wizard World.
With the likes of the Iron Sheik, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and we'll mention who we didn't get to talk to, wouldn't talk to us.
That's all coming up here on Review Away. Did you have a good week, Wei?
Yeah, it was good. My brother's in town from Shanghai, so...
How's he doing? You should have brought him in.
To Review Away?
Yes.
Well, first of all, he's not a wrestling fan, but he did watch part of this pay-per-view with me, so you'll hear about his experience.
Oh, this will be fantastic. Even more reason why he should have come.
I don't think so.
All right. I want to bring everyone's attention to our Facebook page, as always, that you can join. It's reviewaway.com, reviewaway.com. I've noticed our members have kind of hit a bit of a stagnant... flat line of late. In fact, we lost some people this week, then we regained some. We're at about 734 members right now, and I think we had that huge surge going into WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I think we're a little...
We're kind of getting into TNA territory now, where we're losing some fans some weeks and then gaining in another week.
So next week, we are going to have four boxes here that we can unlock with keys.
Yeah. Where are my car keys, John?
They're hanging above the ring right now, Wei.
Well, I have to find another key so that I can open my box with
I
the
never
car
want
keys
to see keys on a pro wrestling show again. Five fucking keys on Monday last week.
That's so funny. I haven't even watched it, but
I hated Impact last week.
I can't wait for the day. Maybe 5 years from now, we'll get to review an episode of Impact on Review Away.
Yeah, because believe me, I get enough TNA every week in 2 hours that the last thing I want to do is watch more TNA. Above what we're watching.
A lot of people have suggested us that we review some of the earlier TNA pay-per-views.
Sure.
So we
TNA used to be great way back.
Yeah,
way back when you and I were in school.
It'd be a nice little contrast to see where they were and where they are now.
Yeah. When their pay-per-view buys were actually higher than they are now.
Yeah, for a fraction of the budget that they have.
Yeah. All right, let's get into this review, because it's going to be a very lengthy edition today of Review Away. SummerSlam 2005, taking place in August of 2005 in Washington, D.C. at the MCI Center, Way. And we started off with Lillian Garcia singing the national anthem. And from there, we go into the opening montage done to the Seether music video. And I like this opening, Way, because they had a little clip of all the matches, and then the music stopped as Michael superkicked Hulk Hogan to set up the main event, and it set that match apart from the rest of the event, which I really liked. I love this this build-up for SummerSlam that year.
Mm-hmm.
Was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And this did, like, 635,000 buys on pay-per-view. It was gigantic. It was the last time Hogan drew anything.
I don't remember actually watching this pay-per-view at all, but...
Wouldn't you have been with us by that
point? Yeah, I was there, actually. I watched this with you guys back at 640.
Yes.
In the offices, and... I just...
So you do remember watching this?
I don't remember the show itself, is what I mean.
Oh, okay.
But just looking at the card and remembering some of the storylines that were happening at this time, it seemed like a very good show.
They announced right off the gate 18,176 fans at the MCI Center. I don't know if it was a work number or not. Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Jonathan Coachman were on the Raw commentary team. Every time Jonathan Coachman was a part of the commentary, it was a blur to me, and he was not needed on this show.
Yeah, like, I mean...
I hate three-man booths.
When did they... I mean, he was providing the role of the heel commentator, but when did they make King step away from that? Because King had traditionally always been the heel guy, but then he had started to take more of a, you know, neutral babyface stance.
I think it was more so when he came back there in 2001.
After the Heyman stuff.
Like, he was always kind of, especially for the Rock stuff, he always reacted like a babyface. I mean, he hadn't really been a strong heel since the late 90s. But
which is too bad.
I agree. I kind of like the dichotomy. Like, when JBL was doing commentary.
He's excellent.
He was fantastic. Yeah. On the SmackDown side, we had Michael Cole and Taz. And that leads us to our first match of the evening, way Orlando Jordan defending the United States title against Chris Benoit. Jordan threw a left hook. Benoit hit a German suplex into a crossface, taps out, wins the title. 28 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's the Chris Benoit portion of the pay-per-view.
Exactly, yes. The whole storyline here going into it was that they were OJ was promising a tap knockout, whereas Chris Benoit was promising a tap out, and we saw a tap out quite early. And I like short finishes like this. I thought this was very appropriate. I mean, it was memorable and realistic, and puts Benoit over strong, and no one cares about Orlando Jordan anyway.
No, unless you're on the TNA creative team right now.
Yeah.
Where this past week, did you watch? You did not watch it.
I did not
watch
it. And I'm sorry, I missed it. I read about it, and I've seen screen caps.
Awesome. Backstage, Eddie Guerrero is with Vicky Guerrero as they discuss the motives for tonight's custody match for Dominic Mysterio.
Fuck.
I thought Eddie was fantastic in this little vignette, and Vicky was noting that Eddie has a heart of gold. But the storyline here is that Eddie cannot beat Rey Mysterio, and Vicky is alleging that this match tonight, you're not worried about Dominic and his well-being. You just want to beat Rey Mysterio and are using Dominic. And Eddie was appalled at this accusation made by Vicky. And let me tell you, the leaps and bounds that Vicky has made as a character, when you look, this was probably one of her first times on TV in a speaking role. Yeah. Holy shit. She's fantastic.
She was a completely... I mean, here, she was barely a character. She was just...
She played the role, though, she was designed for.
Yeah.
She was the wife of a wrestler.
Yeah.
She was not an on-air character.
It's very bizarre to think that in 5 years' time, she would become the top female heel in the company under, obviously, you know, terrible circumstances. But it's interesting to see where we are 5 years from that point.
Yes. We go into the second match of the evening here. Edge versus Matt Hardy. Now, this was the summer. For those of you that might be new to the WWE product, we'll quickly recap this way. Matt Hardy and Lita, of course, had been dating for a number of years. And then Matt Hardy was injured. And Edge and Lita had a legitimate affair during this time. And the WWE thought the only course of action they could take was to fire Matt Hardy while he was injured, which they did. Mm-hmm. And then there were tons of "We want Matt" chants, and they eventually brought Matt Hardy back, and it led to this match at SummerSlam. So they were playing off a real-life issue between these two.
That whole... when he finally reappeared on Raw... Because, I mean, I was for those of us who followed this whole feud on the internet, it was really... The internet is where all this really came...
Yeah.
Happened, right?
Matt was the one that took the story public on the internet, and that was... What led to a lot of issues that the WWE had with him and letting him go, and the subsequent booking of him when he returned, was they were pissed that he made that whole thing public.
But the I just remember that Raw when Matt Hardy finally reappeared onto TV. It was just
no one was expecting
amazing.
It and they so booked good. It so well. Even that line that they scripted where he yelled out, "Ring of Honor,
see me in ROH." It just made it so real. Then the announcers were completely silent throughout that whole segment. It just made it so awesome. One of the few times in pro wrestling that I just remember completely believing.
I don't know why I just remembered this, but for some reason, I remember the day after that Raw, I was speaking with someone that worked in the WWE offices, and the person emailed me and was like, "Congratulations on the mention you guys got on Raw last night,"
what?
And I was confused, and then they were explaining about the Ring of Honor thing, like,
no,
yeah, Ring of Honor is like one of us on the internet that got onto Raw.
Great.
I was like, really? I don't understand.
We aired ROH, but no, we had nothing to do with
maybe. Yeah, that was weird. Anyway. We go to a video package, and this is a very well done video package. They had photos of Hardy and Lita together, and they go through the whole backstory of this. And it leads to this. I guess, were there special rules for this match? Wait, was it a street fight? Was it just a straight-up match?
I think it was just a match. No, I didn't notice any awkward finish. Well, the finish was... Anyway.
This was a... I was always amazed at this, of how these two were going to work a match together.
Yeah.
And they booked this match as a fight, where the two were just... They were not trading holds. There was no collar and elbow tie-up to start the match. I like that about it, where it was just a fight. Hardy, at one point, went for a rear naked choke on Edge, but Edge made the ropes. We saw the spot that Edge did later at the following year's WrestleMania with Mick Foley in the Fire, where he gave a spear to Hardy right to the floor that just looked like a brutal spot, because this time you didn't have the table to break that. And crowd was really into this match. Yeah. And you look at the history, this was the program that turned the corner for Edge. Because prior to this, I found the problem with Edge was no one really loved Edge and no one really hated Edge. He was just an in-betweener, whether you booked him as a face or a heel. And after this, he was really clicking as a heel. What? You're looking at me.
No, I'm not looking at you. No, I'm looking at you like I'm in complete agreement with you. Because here you have Edge legitimately cheating on, or Lita cheating on Matt Hardy with Edge. Edge is a homewrecker.
He is. They do a spot in this where Hardy's delivering punches and forearms to Edge in the corner. And then Edge moves out from under Hardy, whose feet are on the second rope. And Hardy goes face first on the ring post. And I don't know if he just timed this really, really well. It looked like his face got smashed into that post.
Yeah.
Which, for all I know, he probably did it hard way, because he was bleeding right from his forehead. It didn't even look like a gig mark, but it could have been. Hardy is bleeding. Edge just attacks him with knees, kicks, and then does a running stomp to the head of Hardy. And then the referee stops the match due to excessive blood. And... The crowd farts on this finish, which I guess, I don't know if they were going for the UFC style of influence here that they got, but fans are not conditioned to matches ending that. And it really ended, especially the babyface being booked like this.
Yeah.
I would have much rather the babyface just beats the heel into oblivion, and then that heel can come back saying, "You never beat me."
I guess
the whole Matt Hardy will not die gimmick that they were trying to really push. But
which didn't work at all.
No.
It's retarded. Think about it. Okay. You have guys in pro wrestling, you have guys get concussions, torn quads, even in some cases paralyzed, and they have to finish a match. In this situation, the guy bleeds a little bit more than usual. He wasn't even bleeding all that much. And they stopped the match.
The ref just looked at him. He wasn't even checking on him.
It was so stupid. So lame. Yeah. This should have been longer. And considering the amount of build they had...
This is probably one of the most heated programs going into this.
Yeah, a very disappointing match. What happened after this? Did Matt Hardy ever end up getting...
No, they did do a match the following month where Edge beat him in a cage match.
The fuck? What the fuck? The guy steals his girlfriend and beats him two times on pay-per-view.
No. Hardy got the win the next
month. Hardy got the win.
But then, if I'm not mistaken, they did a Loser Leaves Raw match with which Edge won the blow-off to the feud.
It's
Hardy was
what
booked...
What the fuck?
After this Edge program, Hardy was buried for like a year and a half solid. It was just terrible booking. It was how dare you get over on the internet or...
Yeah.
The crowd responds to you.
It seems like another one of those cases where... politics backstage gets in the way of proper storytelling.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It just doesn't give the fans what they want.
Michael Cole then announces...
The first time in the history of the WWE, the custody of a child will be determined in a match, in a ladder match.
And as soon as I heard that, there was a part of me that quickly thought, is Dominic going to be hanging above the ring in the ladder match? That would have been awesome if he was in like a little cage.
Yeah.
And they had
just hanging off of some harness, maybe.
No. We have Eddie Guerrero against Rey Mysterio in a ladder match. The build-up is that Eddie states he's the father of Dominic, and they have a soundbite from Dominic. Is it true, Dad? They're going to fight for the custody of Dominic, Way. Can you imagine the psychological problems? This kid was 8 years old at the time. I don't care how well you explain this.
Are you talking about just storyline-wise, if this were true, or are you talking about the actual psychological effects it has on this Dominic...
If you were 8 years old and your dad told you that you were going to be fought over in a match where the other man claims to be your father...
it would totally fuck them up. But I'm thinking about the actual Dominic.
Yes.
Dominic Gutierrez. Hey, like, he, just to be involved in this acting TV storyline, it must have really fucked
them
up.
They just used the other kid, Aaliyah, in an angle like a month ago. Like,
she's good, though. She's a much better
actor. She was fantastic.
Much better actor than Dominic. Dominic sucked her.
Hearing the ring announcer.
Oh, my God.
Announced Tony Chimmel announcing this.
Following contest is a ladder match for the custody of Dominic.
It was just awesome. They then introduced Dominic.
The following match is a ladder match for the custody of Dominic.
Then they showed Dominic at ringside with who Michael Cole identifies as Miss Crabtree, the social worker.
He has been
taken out of custody of the Gutierrez family and placed him
with a social worker. What the fuck kind of social working organization would allow something like this to be decided via a ladder match?
All right, Dominic, these two men are going to engage in a match with a steel object, and whoever inflicts more damage on the other opponent is going to be given custody of an 8-year-old child.
Yeah. They'll be your father, person who...
Deadbeat fathers out there, take notice of how you can win your children back. A ladder match.
This is a brilliant match.
Before we get into the match, I do want to bring up this point that I cannot fathom here, is that Dominic was clearly identified on the show as being 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So Eddie is claiming to be the father. Hmm. Does that mean Vicky is the mother?
I'd assume so.
Vicky had no vested interest in this at all.
Well, she didn't want... What do you mean? Sure, she did. She didn't want Dominic as part of her family.
Okay, but wait a minute. If Eddie and Vicky had this child, why would they have given it up?
Because they were probably doing it as a segregate parents. They probably had the child, and then for some reason they decided not to. You know what?
Why would they keep their other kids, which they also identified on the show?
Well, maybe Eddie was not financially stable at the time.
He was working in WCW with Rey Mysterio.
What year would it have been?
2005.
1998.
So it would have been 8 years. So
1997. Okay.
Eddie and Rey were working together in WCW. So either Eddie was cheating on Vicky at the time because they have children who are older than Dominic.
Okay. Yeah.
They explained Eddie and Vicky have been married for X amount of years.
Maybe it was just, maybe Eddie just donated semen to Rey Mysterio's wife. Maybe that's...
Rey has another kid! It's not like he was impotent. How did Rey end up with this kid?
What? Well, I mean, this matters like
all
this.
I want is some logic.
Matters like this are complicated, and I'm sure it can be explained in a variety of ways.
Eddie's the father. He may have had it out of wedlock, and somehow the Mysterios picked up this kid. And Eddie waited until now to bring it up, because he has lost a few matches, and he needed a mental edge. Oh, yeah, he's the father of my child. Sorry.
Just accept it.
Turn my brain off for this match. All right. The introduction of this. Taz starts talking about his own son. And then Michael Cole speaks about his two adopted sons. And he can sympathize with Rey here. Because Rey loves his son Dominic.
Michael Cole actually has adopted children?
I think so. He said that on here.
Huh.
We should note, Eddie's back was a mess at this point in his career. He was in really rough shape. I mean, this was just a couple of months before he passed away. He passed away in November of that year. And some of the bumps in this match make you cringe.
Yeah.
We saw some of the spots we saw in this. A seated senton over the top rope by Mysterio to Guerrero, which would have torn the groin of a normal man. We then saw a helo by Guerrero over the top rope and landing on the back of his neck onto the ladder that was on top of Mysterio.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Both climbed the ladder, and this one's hard to explain. There was a second ladder that was attached in between the rungs, and Eddie takes a back bump onto the ladder, and Mysterio just falls so badly onto the leg of the other ladder. How these two weren't dead, I am shocked.
This ladder match, I mean, there was very little finesse in a lot of these moves.
There was a lot of big bumps, though. Like, these guys took a lot of damage in this.
Yes, but I would
one of the more dangerous ladder matches I've seen.
But I would just compare this to some of the other ladder matches, some of the better ladder matches that we've seen in the past. And, like, those, they're actually usually planned out very well and executed very nicely, where at least people would land flush on a ladder.
Yep.
But here, it just seemed like a lot of times they messed up. And, but it looked very brutal nonetheless.
This one spot was awesome. Eddie was climbing up the ladder, and Dominic runs into the ladder, into the ring, and begins to shake the ladder.
Yeah.
And it was just hilarious. Like, he was doing nothing to this ladder. Eddie climbs down. Why were you shaking the ladder like that? I could have fallen. Awesome.
And then he
just
says,
awesome.
And then he says, you gotta respect me. You know why? Because I'm your new daddy, S.A.
He was so good.
That was awesome.
Mysterio makes the save and then does a 619 into the ladder, which goes into Eddie. Then Eddie teases delivering an electric chair to Ray off of the ladder, but Ray turns it into a sunset powerbomb to Eddie off the ladder. Once again, Eddie's back was a mess going into this. Eddie takes the ladder out from under Ray, and then Ray is hanging from the ring above
the briefcase.
The briefcase.
The custody papers.
And then he falls down into an Eddie Guerrero powerbomb. Eddie then climbs the ladder with Ray underneath the ladder. Ray then takes the ladder out as Eddie stalls and then hangs, and he takes a bump. And this, Eddie just looked pissed during this spot.
Oh, yeah.
Because this did not look planned. And I think when you look a few spots ahead, you realize that somebody missed their cue. Because Eddie just kind of improvised here. He delivered three amigos to Ray, with the last one, Ray landing on the ladder, which if that was an improvised spot, if I was Mysterio, I would have been pissed. That looked like it hurt like hell.
Mm-hmm.
Then Eddie climbs the ladder again, and this time Vicky runs out and stops Eddie and ends up knocking the ladder over with Eddie on it. So I have a feeling Vicky was supposed to come out for the last ladder climb spot while Ray was trapped underneath.
Mm.
That's what it seemed like to me.
Very possible.
Vicky tackles Eddie to stop him from getting to Ray for the finish. As Ray grabs the briefcase, and afterwards Ray comes back and knocks out Eddie with the briefcase after Eddie was throwing a shit fit for losing because he lost his son and he lost the match.
This was a good match. I mean, I enjoyed the match. I wouldn't rank it with any of the, you know, great ladder matches that we've seen in the past, but nonetheless, it was very exciting.
This was all designed around the storyline, and for those of you that might think this whole storyline with Dominic was ridiculous, this was one of the most successful storylines in SmackDown history in terms of television ratings. It was like every week they were doing these 15-minute segments, and I remember reading about it at the time in The Observer. It was just, the audience gain was just phenomenal. This program was very, very successful.
That was
cool. It did continue for a few more weeks after this.
What stood out to me in this whole thing, though, was some of the reactions of Dominic that they would cut to in between the match. And there's just that somersault senton onto the ladder that you mentioned earlier. They cut to a replay of Dominic's reaction, and just nothing. Like, his face was just like, it was just so funny to me.
The acting genes went to the daughter.
The daughter.
Let's move over here now. Todd Grisham is backstage with Chris Jericho, and he says that John Cena will be the flavor of the month, just like David Cassidy, the New Kids on the Block, and for some reason, Andrew Hsu.
Who is that?
He was on Melrose Place in like the early 90s. Just the most random name.
That's hilarious.
He's the younger brother of Elizabeth Hsu, who was in Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah.
Just such a random name.
Andrew Hsu.
Up next, we've got Eugene, who is accompanied by Christy Hemme, taking on Kurt Angle, a much more jacked up version of Kurt Angle than we see today. He must have been about 250 pounds, and he now wrestles at about 200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they mentioned his weight as about 250-something. He would have been a heavyweight in the UFC.
There was no drug testing at this point in the WWE. Not that that comment has anything to do with anyone on this show. I'm just stating a fact.
Yeah.
Right away, Eugene is slapped by Kurt Angle to start the match. Fans are booing Eugene whenever he goes on offense. Angle cuts off a people's elbow attempt by Eugene to a gigantic pop. Then Eugene hits a rock bottom for a two count. He hits a stunner for another two count.
Angle is so good at waiting till the last millisecond.
His timing was great, but he was the babyface in this match.
Angle.
Angle.
Yeah,
was.
He was.
Like, he was crowd, supposed to be the heel, but the crowd
turned on Eugene.
Yeah, Eugene's gimmick had run so stale by this point. It had been like a year of him, and I think everyone was sick of him. We see an angle slam by Angle into an ankle lock, and Eugene taps out. Just a solid, clean win by Kurt Angle, who was getting ready for a main event run with John Cena. Mm-hmm. So they put him over very, very strong. And after the match, Angle stood up on a chair in the ring to receive his Olympic gold medal that Eugene had won in a previous match. And Angle, you're a winner.
Oh, this was a good match. It was short, but it accomplished everything
just
it was supposed to.
Beat the shit out of Eugene.
Yeah, Eugene got in all his spots with the people's elbow and the rock bottom and the stunner. Good reversals and near falls, and it made Kurt look like a badass, so nothing to complain about.
We go backstage, and the Divas are all in bikinis washing a limo with the presidential seal on the side of the car, and Vince McMahon rolls down the window and says, "Why not?" And they show a bumper sticker that reads, "McMahon for President."
Where do we begin the list of reasons why not?
I don't Jesus. Know. There's quite a long list being made right now by the media for
yeah.
Linda McMahon for Senate.
She's already having enough trouble. Fuck, man. Could you imagine?
Vince McMahon running for president.
Oh, God.
Up next, we have The Undertaker against Randy Orton in a rematch from WrestleMania 21 from that year. The match starts off with Undertaker working on the left shoulder of Orton, and I just noted here, The Undertaker significantly better in 2010 than he was in 2005. I thought he was so slow in this match.
Yeah, he was. I didn't find it horrible. He was working a very methodical style. And
this it's always hard to tell with that because he's always working hurt.
Yeah.
You never know what is his physical limitations.
This match to me was almost like the complete opposite of a typical ECW match that we reviewed last week where they spent a lot of time on body parts and
yes.
working on each other's legs and shoulders.
Yeah, Orton was working on the hamstring of Undertaker. Conversely, we saw Taker counter an RKO. Taker went for the tombstone, and they did a series of reversals with both guys attempting a tombstone, and it ended up with a neck breaker by Orton. Taker would later hit a choke slam. And then this old man runs into the ring, and they try to play it off as a fan running into the ring, and that this was not supposed to happen, yet everyone acknowledged him, the camera stayed on him, and it would play into the finish. As Orton had Taker distracted, he hit an RKO, and Orton gets the win due to the distraction and the RKO, and then they reveal the old man to be Cowboy Bob Orton, and they do the dual Randy Orton pose with the arms in the air.
Yeah.
This was awesome.
The one thing I remember from... the thing that reminded me that I watched this show with you guys was that I remember Jason completely marking out for the double pose with Bob Orton and
anything with Cowboy Bob Orton, I love.
Yeah.
He's great. Just fantastic.
I thought the whole fan thing at the end was weird, but when they revealed that it was Bob Orton, I thought it was an interesting way of bringing him into the mix. Yeah, it was good. It was a good match, I thought. It was all right.
They go and they then show members of the Republican National Party that are in attendance at this show because they're in Washington. And from there, we go into our WWE title match. It's John Cena defending the title against Chris Jericho. And this match, more than anything else, I think it was the crowd that really made it as they were split throughout the match. And it, I think, significantly added. We saw Jericho counter an FU attempt into a tornado DDT. Dueling chants, as we noted by the crowd for both men, and it made for a very, very good atmosphere. And it just kind of started out of nowhere with the crowd going back and forth for Cena and Jericho. Mm-hmm. I didn't think any of Cena's offense looked good. Very, very awkward.
This match was all Jericho, man.
Yes.
The guy bumped like crazy for Cena, and he really just carried Cena to, I would say, a very good match, actually. This was another enjoyable match.
It's just one thing, like, Cena, I'll always say, the guy works really hard in the ring, but it's not really fair to compare to Kurt Angle, but he just looks so smooth with everything. You can suspend disbelief that this guy is in a match, whereas Cena, it's just everything he does feels so calculated, so planned, and there's nothing smooth about his work. It just looks like awkward spots.
Yeah. Well, he's it's not his strength, and he'd admit that.
Mm-hmm.
His strength is his
just my note. But when people say, "Why do you guys shit on Cena?" That's one of the reasons that it just annoys me with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it just
Yeah, some people don't mind that. He's a very
he gets a reaction average. Like this match was super heated.
Yeah,
and I mean at the end of the day, I mean that's what you're hoping to achieve. We saw Jericho lock in the Walls of Jericho, but Cena countered Jericho and he hits the FU and gets the win from there. And then after the match, Cena keeps pointing to his eyes and saying, "I'm still here." After the match, because his tagline at that point was, "The champ is here."
He points to his eyes.
He was pointing to his eyes.
What is it like? How with two hands?
With one, like the Al Pacino,
like a peace sign into the eyes.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Next up, another title match. This one's for the world title. Way Batista, who hails from Washington, defending the world title against JBL in a no holds barred match. And during the entrance, both men start fighting, with JBL yelling, "Come on, animal! No holds barred!" And he begins whipping Batista with a belt. And Michael Cole notes in the commentary, there's never been anything fancy about JBL. We see a spine buster by Batista, who then shakes the ropes, delivers the Batista bomb, and he hesitates to go for the pin as the crowd chants one more time. And then he delivers a spine buster to JBL onto the steel steps.
Wasn't it a power bomb?
It was a Batista bomb,
yeah,
onto the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And just months later, JBL would retire because of back injuries.
Really?
Smart bump to death. And Batista gets the win. And after the match, because during the entrance, JBL, a bunch of dollar bills fell from the ceiling with his face on it.
Yeah.
Batista picked up one of the bills, and he tore it in half. And Cole notes, "I guess it was counterfeit." What an ending to this chapter. And that's for nice. More on the Batista JBL feud, be sure to go pick up Batista's book, where he notes that he never had any chemistry with JBL, and all of their matches were terrible.
Yeah.
This was at least short, had a finish the fans popped for, and Batista got a big pop in Washington. I guess that was the positive. Did you like this match?
I didn't think it was terrible, but I also don't think you can get any better than this out of these two together. I think Batista's much better as a heel than a babyface like he was here, but whatever.
From there, we move on to the main event. It was one of the best main events the WWE has promoted in years. It did very, very well on pay-per-view. It was a match they had never done before. It was Hulk Hogan versus Shawn Michaels, billed as Legend versus Icon. And this was all built on Shawn Michaels being pissed off that Hogan was so popular and yet not a good worker. And Michaels didn't understand how he worked so hard and everyone just loved Hulk Hogan. So that was it. He just wanted to see if he could beat Hulk Hogan. That was the premise of this feud.
That was the legitimate premise of this feud.
Yes. No keys, no lock boxes.
Yeah.
No polls, no multiple person matches.
But Michaels had actually mentioned that he was a much better wrestler than Hulk Hogan,
yes,
but didn't understand why.
Yes.
Meanwhile, that's what he really believed.
It was.
Okay.
I think a lot of people probably believed that at the time. Are there fans that dispute the wrestling skills?
No, I mean, there's nothing. But Shawn Michaels was actually pissed off about this going,
yes,
into this match.
Didn't understand why people would cheer Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
And I thought the video package for this was fantastic. Do you recall this video package?
I do. I saw it. It was very good.
I thought it was so well done.
The whole Larry Bling thing.
Yep. They did. They recapped, and then they just had them constantly going back and forth about who's going to win this match. I just thought it was really well done. Then for 30 seconds, they just pan around the arena, and then Shawn Michaels' music hits, and they booed the fuck out of Michaels going into this. So I should note, Michaels had turned heel for this program, and his heel work that summer, off the charts.
Yeah, they had that show in Montreal.
Oh, that was the go-home show for this.
Yeah.
It was in Montreal, where for any of you to go onto YouTube and just type in Shawn Michaels calls out Brad or Montreal, he does this promo, and then midway through Brett's music plays, the pop of that crowd in Montreal, I think that's one of the reasons why Brett never got a pop at that level during this whole run where he came back, which saddened me, because had he done in a Canadian appearance, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Like in 2005, I really believe that was the best time for Brett to come back. I think it was a few years too late when he finally did come back this year. because, my God, they were loud.
Yeah.
We then see Hulk Hogan's entrance, where the American flag was a backdrop at the entrance as he posed. Very patriotic pay-per-view this was, Way. Being in Washington.
Yes, that's right. That makes sense.
Jim Ross was the star of this match. Noted that neither had ever lost at SummerSlam. We saw tons of bumps and selling by Shawn Michaels in this match.
Mm-hmm.
To the point of, it never really hit me until you watch the latest edition of Botchamania or have seen any montages of this match. Like, it was almost like Michaels was ridiculing Hogan.
He was. He definitely was.
Like, it was ridiculous.
That's why I mentioned that. He honestly believed that this guy, Hulk Hogan, does not deserve, first of all, to go over in this match. Secondly, to even be in this match at all. Michaels just, you can tell he was taking the piss out of this whole thing. Just the way he's working. The guy does some extra flips every time. He would fall down, get up, and then fall down again. It's so funny.
The worst part of this match, without question, with Jonathan Coachman. He states earlier that he didn't realize Hulk Hogan was taking this match as seriously as he was. He's the babyface in this match.
Yeah.
Then he later asked Jim Ross if this match will favor Michaels the longer it goes. And Jim Ross picks up his hand and bitch slaps Coach by saying, "Yes, that's why I mentioned that earlier." Fuck you, Jonathan Coachman, was how I translated that.
Oh, man.
Man, Coach, just shut the fuck up. He was horrible in this. I just hate Jonathan Coachman on commentary.
Lawler wasn't that much better, to be honest.
No, Jim Ross could have done this alone.
Lawler mentions this is the biggest match in the career of Hulk Hogan.
No, it's not.
Not even close.
They fight on the floor by the Spanish announce table. In the ring, Michaels at one point had mounted Hulk Hogan and is delivering punches, and this is when Hogan just blades, and he's just bloody here.
It looked really good.
Like, just the crimson mask here. We see a sleeper applied by Shawn Michaels, and Hogan is just bleeding all over his arms, yeah. Like just to a sick degree. Stuff you will never, ever, ever see today in the WWE. Michaels' facials here as the referee lifts up Hogan's arms. On the third one, Hogan keeps his arm up. Michaels' facials were fantastic. Hogan goes for the big boot. But as Michaels comes back from the ropes, he does a flying forearm into Hogan, taking out both Hogan and referee Mike Chioda. This is when we hear, "We want Brett" chants, and Michaels mouths to the crowd, "Oh, you want Brett?" He applies the worst sharpshooter in history.
Yeah.
He was so bad at applying this sharpshooter, it was like putting on a wedding dress.
This was horrible. For those of you who saw the documentary we put together, Brett mentions that even in Survivor Series, Michaels didn't know how to put on a sharpshooter properly. And
Hulk Hogan,
this was 8 years later, and he still didn't know.
Hulk Hogan is in the sharpshooter and climbs to the ropes, does the big hope spot, grabs the ropes to the big pop, and Jonathan Coachman says, "I just saw him tap twice." He is the worst commentator in history. He does not even understand the psychology of how you call a babyface hope spot.
Yeah.
Oh, he's just an idiot.
Well, he was the heel commentator.
You're not supposed to be pointing out that the babyface technically just gave up the match.
But you know that he didn't actually give up. It might have been too...
Coach was lost here. He might as well have been calling this as a shoot. I just...
All right.
Oh, it's just basic pro wrestling commentary here. We see a low blow by Shawn Michaels. He grabs a chair, delivers a shot to the forehead of Hulk Hogan. And then we see an elbow drop and a sweet chin music by Michaels. Sorry. There's no way Hogan was going to the top rope or delivering sweet chin music.
I don't think so.
Hulk begins hulking up. Michaels sells the big boot by taking a bump to the floor. It hit him so hard that he went down to his back, up back to his feet, and then he flipped over.
In perfect position for the leg drop.
This was like him and Hunter were just laughing their asses off, probably watching this afterwards.
But it's interesting, though, that to somebody not knowing or not seeing all these oversells in succession, it's a little tough to tell.
When you see them all together, it's like, this guy just shit on this match.
Yeah.
A main event of a pay-per-view bought by 600,000 people in a sold-out arena.
Yep.
That's a lot of gall right there.
It really is, yeah.
Leg drop hit by Hogan, and Hogan gets the win. And afterwards, Michaels turns himself back babyface by shaking Hogan's hand and saying, I needed to know, and I found out. And he leaves the ring.
Fuck.
As Hogan poses. Oh. And in fact, these two were supposed to do a rematch at the September pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah?
And the next night, Shawn Michaels went out on TV and just buried this match. And when I interviewed Hulk Hogan back in December, he brought this up about how unprofessional Shawn Michaels was in that interview the next night and just killing the program, and Hogan was done. He's like, I'm not working with him anymore. I caught my win. Fuck him. So they did not do another match after this
because
Hogan was pissed. And that is SummerSlam 2005, everyone. I would say one of the better SummerSlams in history, and I'm going to give this one a 7 out of 10.
I thoroughly enjoyed this show. I give it an 8 out of 10.
I didn't think it stalled at any points.
It didn't.
It moved pretty well, and I thought the main event was built so well. And for those people that feel that, you know, I know some people groan, this was a perfect use, I thought, of Hulk Hogan. I mean, this match was not being sold on his wrestling skill. I don't think any of his matches has ever been sold on that fact. It was a dream match that people wanted to see.
Yeah.
You had one guy who could work and one guy who could get by just being Hulk Hogan and doing a few trademark spots, and it did tremendously well on pay-per-view.
Yeah, the matchups were good. The pairings themselves on paper, they looked good. I mean, save for maybe Eugene Angle, but even that was kept
short. It was
short,
and it had a point to build Kurt Angle, because at the next pay-per-view, Kurt Angle was challenging John Cena. So you had to put him over solid, and that's what they did.
Yep.
So I can't complain. The Edge-Matt Hardy booking was a little suspicious.
No,
I
didn't like that. But the build was good, and go ahead.
If you can get by some of the holes of the Ray Eddie thing, it was a good match, and it was a very successful program on TV with two very over-performers, and this was very well done.
Yeah, Hogan Michaels was another
very This was also Chris Jericho's last pay-per-view for 2 years. He would leave the company the next night and would not come back till 2007, so that was the last bit of notes for that show. So,
yeah.
What do you give this one?
I gave it an 8, I said.
Oh, I was not listening to you.
Yeah.
So that's SummerSlam, everyone. I guess now we'll move over. Let's do some feedback first, way before we get into the Wizard World reactions. I printed off some as well. We can go back and forth if you want, because I'm sure you printed off some too.
We probably printed off the same thing.
Awesome. We'll start off with Brandon West, who says, I actually didn't mind this pay-per-view, referring to SummerSlam 2005. I thought that Guerrero versus Mysterio in the ladder match was awesome and quite possibly one of the best I've ever seen. Who would have known that such a nice person and Vicky Guerrero would turn out to be such a bitch? HBK selling to Hogan. Really? Hulk? Really? My only problem with this pay-per-view was that Kurt Angle do...
What did Kurt
Angle do wrong for having to wrestle Eugene on the second biggest show of the year? He should have been wrestling Cena for the title. Well, that was the program they were going to, and Jericho was on his way out. I didn't disagree with that at all.
Charles Spencer says, Christian York has been wrestling with the newly revived Maryland Championship. Oh, he's talking about Christian York, who was involved in a match last week on our
this
ECW
was an excellent follow-up to our
reading a completely different thing. You know what? Let's go through the other SummerSlam ones first before we go back.
Okay,
that.
I did print one off here from Jay Hunter, and I would love to read it, but it's like a book here.
Yeah.
It's actually over 700 words. I checked it. But Jay, I want to thank you for your feedback, and everyone can go check out his thoughts match by match of SummerSlam 2005. Tommy Chung writes, great review of the November to Remember show. You guys joked about doing a TNA pay-per-view, but I thought their pay-per-views were really good before they went on Spike. What pay-per-view was it when Elix Skipper ran across the top of the cage and did a Hurricane Rana? I believe it was against AMW. I remember that show being wicked. It was a very, very good show, and it was Turning Point 2004 with Daniels and Skipper against AMW. One of the better cage matches I've seen, and probably the best cage match in TNA history. And I agree. Some of their pay-per-views, I would say, 2006 and prior were some fantastic shows. 2005 had just such... It was show after show where the word of mouth helped spike their replay buys. Like, they were just having phenomenal pay-per-views at that point in time. And for those of you that say, well, look at them now, though, they were doing more buys at that point in time than they were now. Mm. They were doing more buys when they were on Fox Sportsnet. They are now on Spike TV 2 hours a week and doing less buys.
That's amazing.
That's you can considering change, what they're paying now in salaries.
You can change the time slots as much as you want, but it's not going to change your booking and your product. So I think that really is a problem here.
It's just amazing the mindset of where they've signed all these guys that were stars in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if WWE, as they went into the Attitude Era, had the belief that only people that were stars in the mid-80s,
wow,
when WWF was hot, mm-hmm, are stars?
That would have been terrible.
It's like, who are the New Age Outlaws? Who are, you know, all of these guys that they were pushing at the time, younger talent?
Yeah.
They're not stars. We got to push guys who are big stars in the 80s.
It's outrageous.
It's such backwards thinking.
Yeah.
It's like, have some confidence in building some of your own guys, building some new guys. Anyway, I don't want to get into a TNA rant here because we do that all the time. Anything else here, Wei?
Charles Spencer just put up a really good where are they now little thing for the ECW pay-per-view we reviewed last week. So check that out on the Facebook group. I think this would be good for some of our lesser-known pay-per-views if there are a lot of guys that aren't around.
Yes,
for people
sure
to do that.
Any other feedback?
That's it.
All right, well, let's get into our Wizard World recap. It was 2 weeks ago, WrestleMania weekend, that Wei and I went down to Wizard World in Toronto at the Direct Energy Center because there were a number of wrestlers on hand that we got to chat with, and we arrived there. And I guess, Wei, we'll start off with maybe our the worst interactions we had at the show of people,
okay,
that would not speak to us, because there were a few of them.
I think the first person, I was the camera guy, John was doing the interview, so the first person I went up to talk to, we didn't even really talk to this person, I just shot some B-roll. I was shooting B-roll of everything and everybody. You had various wrestlers and comic book artists sit in front of desks paying for autographs. And then the first wrestler I saw was Kamala. Kamala was completely in his...
Jim Harris
in his total Kamala getup with the no shirt, just the little skirt and the face paint and all that. And this dude could not have looked more like he didn't want to be there. I started shooting him, and then the first thing he says to me was, "Don't shoot me. Don't shoot me. Who is this? Don't shoot me." And then I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine.
And then I went up and said, well, would we be able to do an interview with you later in the day? Maybe, but not now. I don't want to talk right now.
He was just pissed off. He was supposed to do some sort of Q&A afterwards with an independent wrestling federation that was also set up there. And the guy wouldn't even bother to go up to the ring or even stand up at his table to talk. It took the interviewer to go up to him and ask him some questions, and they would ask him questions like, I don't know, like, what's your favorite food and stuff like that.
That was the worst, because he was in front of an audience there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's one thing to blow us off, like, we just wanted to do an interview, that's fine, but it's like, these fans, it was like $25 admission to get into this, and you're paid to be here, you know, be a professional.
Yeah.
You know what? You're having a bad day. Everyone has bad days. Just, you know, put your happy face on. Do what you've been paid to do. Suck it up. And then go home. There's a lot worse things you could be doing than signing autographs and dealing with people who are fans of yours.
I just found it amusing that he would be willing to go through all the trouble of putting on the face paint, wearing a skirt, walking around basically a warehouse in his getup, but not do anything else to excite the fans.
It was incredibly unprofessional on his part. You know what? Turn the gig down.
Why wouldn't he just show up in his clothes? Why wouldn't he just show up in his t-shirt, pants?
It was very, if I was a fan there, I would have been very disappointed, and he was definitely not one of the highlights there. From there, we went and chatted to a number of people. Way we interviewed Kevin Nash, and that interview is up on the website. You can go to thefightnetwork.com/downloads, and you can listen to that entire interview. We then made our way over and chatted with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And before we chatted with Jim Duggan, he had a manager there that was running the booth. And Well, he was a little, he agreed that we could do an interview with him, and then about a second later got very annoyed at our presence, and luckily your tape was rolling, and we got to catch him being a little annoyed at us.
No, if you have to stop, that's fine. Yep.
I forgot that the tape was rolling. That's yep. a good find.
Always have that red light on, Wei. And then we chatted with Jim Duggan, and we're going to be putting all of these interviews in full up on the download section in the next week, but we're just going to play some quick clips here. During the chat with Jim Duggan, I did get to ask him about the recent passing of Dr. Death Steve Williams. So let's hear from him there. Of course, those two worked together in Mid-South.
Dr. Death was one of my best friends. Miss him very, very much. He lost his battle with cancer, where I was, thank the Lord, was able to survive my cancer battle to this point, knock on wood. But Doc was a great man. Of course, he made most of his career in Japan, so a lot of folks in North America aren't really aware of what a huge superstar he was. But Doc was a good friend and a good man, which is hard to say in our profession.
That was me chatting with Jim Duggan, and then I went to conclude the interview with Jim Duggan, and all of a sudden, he was back in character, and it made for a very awkward moment between myself and Jim Duggan.
Well, before you go, young man, you got to give me a ho, kid. Let's have one. Ready? Oh. Come on. Ho. Oh, it's more like this, kid. Ho.
Yes.
So, against my wishes, Wei, I played the clip.
I think that ought to be a Tuttle Boat Trivia soundbite. John Pollock's ho.
And then, of course, I had someone yell at me, that was a weak hoe.
Yeah. Clever. You can guess who.
We then moved over. Who did we chat with next?
We talked to the Iron Sheik.
We're going to play him last.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Because I tried to do a serious interview with the Iron Sheik, and yes. It was a big fail.
All right. So who did we talk to after Hacksaw? We didn't talk to Demolition. We talked to the Honky Tonk Man.
We did chat with the Honky Tonk Man briefly, but I didn't isolate his clip here.
So that's not meant.
We should have definitely chatted beforehand.
Yeah, maybe we should have. We didn't talk to the Honky Tonk Man.
Well, it'll be up, though. It'll be one of the interviews we put up.
Okay.
Next, we chatted with Bushwhacker Luke Williams about blood.
WWE, obviously, right now, they're presenting their product very much PG right now, and they've restricted the use of blood in match. And as someone that used it along with the sheep herders and then in Puerto Rico, I mean, I think in the right context, blood really adds to a lot of matches. What do you think about that decision?
Yeah, well, especially in those markets you just mentioned, the Spanish markets and that, they love that, blood and guts, you know. We did a lot of matches. I'd say in the 70s, we were hardcore before it was hardcore. Barbed wire matches, fire matches, chain matches, all kind, steel cage matches. We were doing those in the 70s. But then, as you can see, we changed to the Bushwhackers, the lovable PG people that entertain people from 5 years old to the grandmas and grandpas. They all loved our antics. So we adapted to that, and it's good to see that Vince is coming back to that market. I think it scoops over a bigger market, especially for marketing. You've got the kids, stuff with the kids. You've got stuff with the older. You're covering the whole scenario.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Luke, and best of luck this weekend here in Toronto.
And it's great to be here on the Fight Network. Whoa! Yeah!
I just found it so fascinating because, I mean, here are all these wrestlers that I'd never met before but only know from TV. You talk to them out of character, and then all of a sudden, once the light's on, they just snap into it like that.
Yep. Some of these guys are just, they're extensions of themselves. And these were some unique guys that we chatted with. At this point, we'll go to the Iron Sheik interview because he does make a return later. I went up to the Iron Sheik, and you know what to expect when you talk to the Iron Sheik. And here we go as I try and have an interview with the Iron Sheik.
We're here in Toronto, Sheik, here at the Wizard World Comic Convention. Tell us a bit about what you're doing here today.
Well, I'm here for a common comedian, and also Megan Bush bring me here for the convention. Pleasure for me today. Wizard World always invite the Iron Sheik here, and pleasure to be here, sir.
Now, tell us a bit about some of your memories working here in Toronto over the years for various promoters.
Good question. I'm here. Hey, Baba, I'm talking. I'm talking on the mic. television, you talk to some jabroni. Let me finish my talking, and then you interrupt me. So anyway, so I'm here with that jabroni agents I have. They call him Twins, Megan Boy. They are big time jabroni. So anyway, but I come here for the visitor board because they are good people, and I'm happy to be here, happy to be here.
Now, as well, following some of the major promotions, the WWE and TNA, do you still watch either of them?
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry, sir. Say it again, please.
Just about two of the major promotions right now, WWE and TNA, are you still watching?
Well, you know, my number one company is I Come Legend, WWE, not TNN. TNN is always number two, but number one, WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. That's why I make it to be Hall of Fame, and I made it to be legend. The rest of them, number 10, number 20, it doesn't matter. Number one is the WWE, and I am WWE champion, and also Canadian heavyweight champion. I'll beat Angelo Moscow, Maple Leaf Garden, and Dewey Robinson, Maple Leaf Garden. I am the real All-America Olympic from Olympic City, Montreal, Canada, to the Vancouver, BC. Everybody know who is the real champion, Iron Sheik. Hulk Hogan, if he wasn't not from Iron Sheik, you be gay barbuster. You can take a walk. You are real jabroni. But I am the legend. I am the real Olympic gold medal. Not you, Hulk Hogan. Without me, have a good day, Hulk Hogan. Take a walk.
From there, we moved on down to the next boothway, and we'll finish up here chatting with Jimmy Superfly Snuka. And this one isn't so much what Jimmy Snuka had to say, but the Iron Sheik in the background.
Yeah, well, you see, brother, things change every time, brother. It's not like the old school days, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's completely different, brother. The education, the psychology of our wrestling business, it's totally different back in the days than what they have today. You know? Today, they don't have a story. Like us, we go like two months without a story with one guy.
But everybody knows.
You know what, brother?
Hulkamania,
I love my profession. I love it.
I really
appreciate it.
To be Hulkamania.
And for the promoters and everybody, they are the best. They're the greatest.
So there are some of the interviews. We'll have the full interviews all posted later this week at thefightnetwork.com/downloads, where we'll also have interviews with the Honky Tonk Man up there. Kevin Nash is already up there, and then the full interviews with Jimmy Snuka, the Iron Sheik, Bushwhacker Luke, Jim Duggan, among others. So did you have a good time at Wizard World, Webb?
I did have a good time. The highlight for me was definitely getting the Iron Sheik to yell at me, "Come to Mansumit." Even before I was even looking at him, he just sees the camera and he does it.
It was Iron Sheik was, he knew exactly what he was doing because he saw us with a camera. Yeah. He'd call us to him, and then he'd just go on these crazy rants, and all these people would gather around to see what the commotion was, and suddenly he had built up just potential customers to take pictures with him.
He's a businessman.
All these guys, they're just workers.
Yeah, well, that's a good gimmick. CNL old man.
So that's going to conclude Review Away. Next week is my pick, so I have decided to go back to 1999 Way and go with the WCW Uncensored pay-per-view from that year, featuring a first blood match between Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair.
Oh, awesome.
And there, we may have a guest next week, so we will see how that works out.
Is it Hulk Hogan?
It won't be Hulk Hogan.
Is it Ric Flair?
No. Wow, you just, no. Neither of those guys.
All right.
Awesome way.
It'll be good, but I'm not sure.
Not as good as Way wants. I think it'll be good. If it comes through, I'll be very happy with it. So WCW Uncensored from last year. I'm actually amazed that we have not done a Uncensored pay-per-view of yet.
Right.
But we're going to do the 1999 Uncensored, and music to go out, Way.
Well, I mentioned that I watched a lot of this pay-per-view with my brother, who... It was a bit of a funny thing because he never really watched much wrestling, so I had to explain all this to him, and he laughed at everything, especially the Dominic shit. Anyway, one of his favorite songs growing up was by a band called Spandau Ballet, a new romantics band from the 80s, and I think this song was very appropriate to dedicate to Hulk Hogan in light of his performance here. And
thank you for coming home. Sorry that the chairs are all warm. I left them here, I could have sworn. These are my salad days, slowly being eaten away. Just another play for today. Oh, but I'm proud of you, but I'm proud of you. Nothing left to make me feel small. Luck has left me standing so tall. Gold, I'm always believing in your soul. Case. Now he's in love with